back together again, you and I, chatting it up Tuesday style, the 14th of January, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today, where we open the show reacting to a confirmation hearing for Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth and his views on women in combat positions. CBS News correspondent Scott McFarland joined us later in the show from Capitol Hill in D.C. about those Trump cabinet nominee hearings. And as always, Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by to chat about the latest General Assembly news and notes. So we are in the middle of another round of an age-old debate, not just here in the U.S., but all around the world. Probably since the beginning of time, probably since the first human that was walking straight up and down, threw a rock at somebody else, and maybe that was the first conflict here. We're talking about the debate here that's risen again and has been center stage today about women in combat roles. Now, we're not talking about pilots or even command positions. We're talking about infantry positions, boots on the ground, and that was brought up today in the hearings for Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth, of course, best known as a Fox News host. He does have some military experience, and to the chagrin of some and to the delight of others, he's been nominated by President-elect Donald Trump, who will take office again this coming Monday on the 20th, to be the leader of the Pentagon, the defense secretary. Now, on one hand, his relative lack of high-level, uber-high-level military experience has been a point of contention. But there are allegations about a settlement he had with a woman that said he made improper advances to her and maybe contact with her. There have been allegations about drinking. So, you know, the whole Pete Hegseth thing. But one of the most fascinating things that's going on today, and I wanted to start with this because I want to get your opinion on this. Because I've always wondered myself whether or not, and again, before you're going to call up and scream at me, you women, hear me out on this. Look, war is a horrible thing. Killing somebody is a horrible thing. Now, having said that, there are hundreds of thousands by the last number or the latest numbers of women who serve quite ably in many aspects of the military. Pilots, command generals, on-field operations, artillery and all that. But there are some, including nominee Hegseth, who say, hey, you know what, we should not have women in combat situations, in infantry situations. In other words, close combat quarters on the ground where they can be shot, they can be killed, they can be taken prisoner and oftentimes abused by some barbarians on the other side. We've heard just horrific stories about that in the Israel-Gaza conflict. So, and we'll have sound bites of Pete Hegseth throughout this first segment, because I want to ask you that. What do you think of women, not in the military, Lord knows the military, with the hundreds of thousands of women that are in the military, wouldn't be able to, in support positions, piloting, training, it wouldn't be, and officers, it wouldn't be possible for the military to maintain the level it does. But in battlefield situations, should we as a society allow women to get shot and killed on the battlefield? Now, I know if you say no, well, you're being sexist, according to some people, or you're being misogynistic, according to some people. And there are other people, many on the conservative side of things, some would say acting patriarchal, I guess that would be in this situation, who says, hey, we should have a military that minimizes the risk of injury and death to women as much as possible. Now, says here, according to the AP, Hegseth's opposition was stated in his book and interviews, was simple and direct before his nomination. in a podcast that was hosted by Sean Ryan back on the 7th of November. He said, quote, I'm straight up just saying we should not have women in combat roles. It hasn't made us more effective. It hasn't made us more lethal. It has made fighting more complicated. So again, and I'm going to play you some audio from some of the questioners in a little bit who tried to say, well, you're anti-woman, which he's, I don't think he is. But I have always wondered myself, and I'd love to hear from you military veterans out there, especially if you're a woman veteran out there. And I know there are some that listen. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Should we have women in forward combat roles, infantry roles, on the ground, in foxholes, returning fire? Now, I know what you're going to say, and this might be an argument for that. Hey, a gun is a gun. Who cares what the gender or the sex, if you will, is of the woman pulling the trigger or the woman, you know, laying down ground fire to help support, you know, air cover coming in. I get that. Hegseth said women have a place in the military, just not in special ops, artillery, infantry, and armor units, the really greasy stuff. That's me saying that, not the AP. In his book, he said women have performed well in dangerous support roles during the war, but he said, quote, women in the infantry, women in combat on purpose is another story. He said, and here's the quote now, women cannot physically meet the same standards as men. And he's talking about, I guess, in the training standards, if you're going to allow the women in combat, are you lessening those training standards? It is a very interesting scenario here. Now, listen, he was grilled on this pretty well, and there was a good back and forth on this. So, again, we seem to be tied up in an age-old debate here. The role of women in the military, and this is not to say that women are any less patriotic or loving of country, but this, you know, it came out today. It was on full display, as they like to say, in the Senate confirmation hearings for Pete Hegseth, with some but not a lot of military experience, also last known as a Fox News host, but nominated by President-elect Trump to be the Pentagon Secretary, Secretary of Defense. That's a pretty heady position. And he has come out, and he has contended that some standards are lowered to the detriment of the military because there was a push enacted a couple, 3 years ago to allow women in forward combat situations. And we're not talking about women in general in the military. There are women soldiers. There are women officers, pilots, commanders. That's not the issue here. The issue is on the ground, in the battlefield. And is it sexist? Is it misogynistic to say, hey, maybe we shouldn't be? And I found where some of the standards were lowered, so I'd love to hear from you. Let me get a little more info and play you some audio here. By the way, you women, you ladies out there, what do you think? 203-333-9422. New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand going at it today with Pete Hegseth.
If you are saying that women shouldn't be serving in the military, and I'm going to read you your quotes, because the quotes themselves are terrible. You will have to change how you see women to do this job well, and I don't know if you are capable of that.
Now, let's defend him here. He doesn't say he's against women in the military, and this is why people hate politicians. So just in the interest of being fair here, here's what he said, whether or not you agree with it.
I'm incredibly grateful for the two women who've served our military in uniform, and including in the Central Intelligence Agency, contributions on the battlefield, indispensable contributions. Senator, I would like to clarify, when I'm talking about that issue, it's not about the capabilities of men and women, it's about standards. And this committee has talked a lot about standards. Standards that we, unfortunately, over time, have seen eroded in certain duty positions, certain schools, certain places, which affects readiness, which is what I care about the most, readiness on the battlefield.
I appreciate that.
And so my comments, however, time and time again to standards.
So that's Jean Shaheen, Democrat, New Hampshire. And one of the things that Democrats really like to do here, the Republicans do it too, some, when somebody's there, and this is what I hate about it, let the person defend him or herself. Let them make their point. See, what happens is, and both sides do this, if you're a Senate member there on high and the nominee you're questioning is starting to defend him or herself, well, you say, well, yeah, but that's a, but wait a minute, you got to give the guy a break here. You may not agree with him, but give him a break. He was not saying women shouldn't be in the military. He wasn't. He was saying standards. Now, Paul, what does he mean by standards? So I found this story dated about 2.5 years ago, March of 2022. After 3 years of complaints and debate, the Army has scrapped its move to have a physical fitness test that is gender and age neutral and will now allow women and other soldiers to pass while meeting some reduced standards. That's what he's talking about, apparently. The decision comes after a study by the RAND Corporation confirmed that men, now here's the problem, this is what he was talking about, whether you agree with him or not. Men were passing the new 6-event fitness test at a much higher rate than women, and that older soldiers were also struggling with their scores in the expanded, more difficult test that was implemented in 2019. The change, however, affects only the regular fitness test that soldiers take annually, qualifying for certain Army jobs like the more demanding combat positions or specialists like Ranger School, will continue to require that everyone, regardless of their age or gender, must pass the same physical test and standards. So again, if you're going to be, I did read where there are one or two women who passed Navy SEAL training. There are one or two women or a handful of women who passed the Army Ranger School. But this is a basic physical test that I guess you have to complete at least once a year. Pete Hegseth saying that because the standards were lowered primarily for women, this is not good. So he's not saying women shouldn't be in the military. He's not saying that. At least today, what he's, and I have his quotes here from earlier. In his book, he said women have performed well in dangerous support roles during the war, but women in the infantry, women in combat on purpose, is another story. He said simply, quote, women cannot physically meet the same standards as men. Is he right on that? I think he is. Now, again, like I said, there's no such thing as a male finger or a male trigger finger or a female trigger finger. But, I mean, that may be true in target shooting. Is it on the battlefield? I don't know. Love to hear from you veterans out there, too. If you want to email me, you don't want to come on the radio, Paul, P-A-U-L, Paul at Voice of CT.com. Jose in Shelton's here. Jose, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, hey, Paul? You got to at some point stop defending Hegel's missiles.
What's his name?
He's, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He's not qualified. A, B, my ex-wife was a Marine.
Okay.
She was in the Gulf War.
Okay.
She fought for her country.
Okay.
Bled for her country.
Okay.
And now you got a guy that used to work for Fox News.
Okay.
Which equals fake news.
Okay.
And they paid almost $1 billion.
What does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with anything?
He's part of fake news.
Okay, but
deny women the right to serve in the military.
He never said that, Jose. He purposely said he's not denying.
I know you're a heck.
No, Jose, listen. All right, that's enough. Jose, have a happy day. Look, we have discussions here. He did not say women shouldn't serve in the military. He's not saying that. I know there are people out there who say, well, that's what he said. No, and listen, I don't love the guy either. But again, this is what's wrong with our country. Immediately, because he was on Fox, because he likes Trump, whatever, he's bad. No, listen to what he's saying. See, this is why we need the next 4 years probably of Trump, because we have a lot of situations in this country that we need to scream and yell about. Now, maybe this is one, I don't know. He's the only guy saying that we're lowering standards here. Now, is Hegseth out of his mind, or is he maybe one of the only people that says, hey, screw this, whether you want to approve me or not, I'm going to say what's on my mind. Don't shoot the messenger. All right. Now, of course, our members of Congress in both the House and Senate watching what's going on with the nomination hearings, the confirmation hearings for the incoming Trump White House cabinet secretaries. They got underway today with questioning hot and heavy of Pete Hegseth to be the next Pentagon chief, and watching all those today and coming up later in the week. Our buddy Scott McFarland, CBS News. Hey, Scott, good afternoon. Great to have you with us for a few minutes. I can imagine just the craziness going on with all these hearings coming up this week. What's that going to be like?
It's going to be a dozen of them this week. Think about that.
God.
This is a fire hose. And some of this is customary. I mean, they want to get the key confirmation hearings done so that the votes can happen promptly when the new president takes office. You don't want to go a long time without a Secretary of Defense. You don't want to go a long time without a Secretary of State. But this hearing today was different. And part of it was in length. This thing went about 3 hours, 45 minutes from top to bottom. I've been to movies that are longer than that. I have watched painful New York Jets games that are longer than that.
Oh, you're a soul brother. Yes, we'll talk about that another time. But yeah, yes, they're all laughing in master control now. But go ahead. Yeah.
So this is quick. I mean, this is for the nation's Pentagon leader who will oversee millions of people and hundreds of billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The dissents from Democrats, including local Democrat Richard Blumenthal, is that there are any number of objections that should be raised about Pete Hegseth, about his qualifications, about the very brief time he spent in leadership, about to tackle the most complex bureaucracy on earth. There are these allegations of sexual misconduct and alcohol abuse that he has denied unequivocally, but when pressed on it today, he failed to give some yes or no answers about certain incidents. But there's nobody leaving the hearing room today that senses Pete Hegseth is on anything but a trajectory towards confirmation.
Wow. Scott, couple things. So I was going to ask you, but now that you just said that, it may be a moot point. Does Mr. Trump or the Trump people, do they have a standby here? What are the rumblings on that? If he did well today, or there's something else that somebody surprises us with, is there a standby on this or not?
It feels like ancient history now, but back when he was first named the nominee a few weeks ago and started making the rounds trying to gather support, Pete Hegseth stumbled out of the gates. There was this drip, drip, drip of information about issues of misconduct, allegations of misconduct that he has denied, but they came out slowly and steadily after he was named the nominee. So he was in some jeopardy, and there were some backup names floating around. And once a backup name gets out there, boy, is your nomination in trouble. If they start talking about a B plan, plan A is fragile. But that seems to have gone by the wayside. He seems to have shored up the support he needs. And so there is no discussion of backup plans. There's no sense one is needed.
Our buddy Scott McFarland, CBS News, with us for a couple more minutes on this. And I've been playing Scott Bites all day. The fascinating back and forth about his thoughts regarding A, women in the military in general, and B, whether or not they should be in forward combat positions. A lot of the stuff predictably mild from Republicans, but got pretty caustic at times from some Democrats.
Yeah, and that was to be expected. I mean, this is Democrats' moment to lay a glove on Pete Hegseth. They may not have the votes to stop him, but this is their chance to try to get some accountability and try to get some promises out of him. And I think you saw that best when the final Democratic senator questioned Pete Hegseth. That's Alyssa Slotkin, a new Democratic senator from Michigan, who was asking, if you are given an unlawful order by the commander-in-chief, will you follow it? If you're told to do something that is illegal, will you do it? And obviously, that's a question that Democrats want to hold him to, because they want to make the argument. If somehow Trump gives an illegal order, they want Hegseth on the record saying, I won't do it. But Hegseth's answer was that Donald Trump would never do that. Other presidents might, but Donald Trump will not. That's where the line of questioning ended. This hearing raised any number of issues, but that was the one thing crystallizing the point the Democrats wanted to get at the most.
And finally, Scott McFarland, you said so many of these coming up. What in your mind of the ones that are left? I mean, there are 15 cabinet positions. Of all the ones that are left, what could be the most contentious? Could it be Tulsi Gabbard?
I look at the ones that aren't on the calendar yet. That's your first red flag. If they haven't put it on the schedule yet, it's because perhaps the people who make the schedule, the majority, the Republicans, don't feel inclined to have a vote or have a hearing yet.
Yeah.
So who's not on the calendar? Three names are not on the calendar. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., for health secretary, who faces accusations of being an anti-vaxxer. He's not on the calendar yet. There may be some more work to be done to shore him up. Tulsi Gabbard, yeah, she's not on the calendar either. She's still making the rounds. She was again yesterday meeting with senators. She told me she's confident she will have her hearing, but it's not there yet. She's been accused by Democrats, including her former House colleagues, of being a Putin puppet, somebody who echoes Russian talking points. And then there's Kash Patel, this Trump ally, this ardent Trump supporter, nominated to be the new FBI director. That is an agency where a lot of senators want independence from the president. This is an independent agency. His alignment with Donald Trump is going to be a problem. His is not on the calendar yet either. But there's nobody out there saying they think these are troubled or certain to fail.
Interesting. It rarely happens. Hey, Scott, great stuff. Scott McFarland covering Capitol Hill, CBS News. Scott, be careful out there, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Great stuff there. Scott McFarland, you hear him at the top and bottom of the hour news here. You may hear him at the bottom here or coming up at the top, CBS News. We return to the wonderful open phones momentarily, but first, every week at this time, Megan Portfolio joins us. She of the Hartford Portfolio blog at the Yankee Institute website, and it's Megan's sworn duty to watch as much of CTN as she can and watch what the people and our wonderful legislators are doing in Hartford. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir, and yourself?
Good. You sound quite chipper for having lapsed back into CTN mode, and you're sending me screenshots the other day, which I laughed at, but that's good.
I knew you would. For your listeners, it was Friday after, you know, work hours, so it was probably around 6 o'clock, and I was on the treadmill at the gym watching CTN, and I just had to send Paul a picture because it was too pathetic for me not to share.
Well, it's not pathetic. It's like you and I in the media, though. We're kind of never really off. We have to watch everything, and what might you be watching for us this merry week?
Oh, well, the good news, the legislature's back, so they are here to solve all of our problems, so no one needs to worry. Just kidding. The session started, and we're already starting with the nonsense. Well, I'll start with the Labor Committee, because they're basically my favorite committee to watch. It's like the WWE of all the committees.
You know what it is? It's like if there was a communist takeover of the WWE. But go ahead. Yeah.
They haven't even started voting on bills yet, and the shenanigans start.
Yeah.
So we have a new member on the committee, and he's a former union employee, not a member, an employee.
Okay.
And he's made it very clear that his role on the committee is to make sure that the labor union members are well protected.
Yeah.
So this is just like foreshadowing for what we're going to have to deal with for this session. And they're already throwing out, having striking workers get paid. Sure how they plan on doing it this year. They've been throwing around, creating slush funds and using taxpayer dollars for it, or for using the unemployment fund, which really wasn't created to give people money who choose to not go to work. But they've got that going on. And actually, the interesting part of that is two of the co-sponsors of the bill, Senator Jan Hockadel, who I've spoke about numerous times on this show, and how many times she is voting for bills that's a conflict of interest.
Sure.
She's doing things to benefit. She's a union president. She's AFT, American Federation for Teacher, union president in Connecticut, six-figure salary. It's a voted, the members have to vote for her to get that position. And, as long as she keeps giving them, as long as the gravy train keeps running, she gets to keep her job. So we've got her on it. And we've got this new, she's not a new legislator. She's, I think this is her second term, Martha Marks from New London.
Okay.
She signs up on this bill. She's a nurse. So if she goes out on strike, she's literally crafting a bill that will ensure her to continue getting a paycheck. It's absurd. And we haven't even started yet, and the shenanigans have already begun.
What have you seen or heard, if anything, Megan, on that tipped wage bill, which thankfully died last year? And I was talking to a couple of the servers at my favorite hangouts, and I told them what was going on, and after their jaws hit the floor, they were able to pick them up. One woman I've known for 2 or 3 years, she goes, "No, I like it the way it is. I clean up on tips. Why are they screwing us this way?" Is that going to come back or not, do you think?
That's a really good question, because Massachusetts had it on their, they do ballot initiatives up there. So they actually had it on the ballot back in November, and it did pass. I take it back. It did not pass.
Oh, thank God.
So I have not heard anything on it. I've not seen anything about it. I do know the group. It's this national group.
It's out of Chicago.
They're basically grifters.
Grifters out of Chicago.
They get a ton of grant money to go around and promote this. And they come in and they cause all this chaos and then leave. But I haven't seen them yet, but that doesn't mean anything. We just started and it's a long session. So
I'm forgive me for being cynical. My listeners will tell you that's how I make a living. But having said that, Megan, you know, we all had the, as I like to say, the back rubs, the foot rubs, the kumbaya, the herb tea and biscuits during the State of the State, where Governor Lamont, to his credit, said, listen, we have to increase energy supply here. And what, 2 days later, we're already hearing from the usual suspects, right? Well, it can't be natural gas. It can't be that. We can't do that, and we can't do this. So the we hate everything choir is really revving up its tune up here so far.
You know, it's like they're sacrificing. How does that phrase go? Sacrificing the good for the perfect.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't just cut off natural gas. It's not realistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you like your, you know, being able to get on your computer and turn your lights on, you know, we need to have electricity for that. And we're not ramped up on wind. And frankly, I don't think wind is ever going to be like a major source of energy. We're not ramped up on solar. And again, I don't think that's ever going to be a major with the technology now anyway.
I don't think it's
ever going to make up the bulk of our grid.
It can be a complementary.
And I'm not opposed to it, but I mean, let's be real. We live in New England. We need, first world problems. We need air conditioning and we need heat. And a lot of that is run on electricity. So, I mean, until people start integrating heat pumps, you know, through their own decision making, not through government mandates. I mean, I don't see any. It's just not realistic, and it's a pipe dream, and it's the progressive caucus.
Yeah.
I think the more moderates, you know, they understand. I think Governor Lamont understands. We can't just cut off natural gas. It just won't happen.
Yeah.
So he was really. I was actually impressed that he did talk about the energy. I mean, it's a huge issue. The Energy Committee did meet last week, and normally, you know, the first meetings, it's just like, you know, hugs and kisses. Hi, we're so excited to be here. And then they schedule the next meeting. But no, this meeting ran on a little bit over 45 minutes. And the chairs, you know, Democrat chairs were very adamant that we are going to be talking about energy and the cost of energy this session.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraged by that. I mean, there has been five bills so far that I've counted to actually do away with that public benefits charge. That's, you know, a bug in everyone's bonnet.
Oh,
right,
that's
now.
Never going to happen. You and I know
that. Not for you, Paul, but for the rest of us outside of Wallingford.
I know. You should move in, boost the tax base, keep my taxes lower, Megan.
I love Wallingford. They have great bars, great restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, $50 a month for my electric bill.
I have to go pay my $200 bills.
Bless you. Real quick, what's coming up maybe, say, next week? Anything on the horizon that's going to get revved up in particular we should be watching or not?
I mean, it's still a little slow. I mean, I think we're up to about 700 or 800 bills now. I mean, now granted, you know, there's a lot of duplicates. So, you know, lawmakers get harassed by their constituents, which good job, constituents, harass away.
Yeah.
You know, so they're putting in a lot of bills right now. So it's still in the beginning stages where they're, you know, they're trying to draft concepts. And so there's really not a lot of information out there. So it's still really, really early. But, you know, expect, you know, towards the end of the month to start seeing some of this bill language filled in. And I can't wait, because I love reading those things and finding all the goodies.
Megan Portfolio, check it out at the Yankee Institute, the Hartford Portfolio. Megan, be good. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. There you go. All right. She watches for us. She watches those hours and hours on CT and CT-N.com, our fine friends of the Connecticut Network.